Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by RacePlace.com, RunCatalina.com, our Challenged Athletes Foundation. We've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews by subscribing to iTunes at Babbittville. Our next guest is a former pro triathlete. He is now the executive director of the Pro Triathlete Union. And Rich Allen joins us. Rich, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Very, very good. It's pretty warm down here in North Carolina, so enjoying some heat. As an English guy, I'm not used to. But
I was going to say, how the heck does an English guy who was a pro for 21 years, pro triathlete for 21 years, end up in North Carolina?
I met a beautiful Carolinian young lady. My wife is from here, so ended up coming over here because the weather is a lot warmer than England, let's just say.
So what got you in the triathlon beginning? You're talking 21 years ago. You're talking the era with Simon Lessing and Spencer Smith. And that was before the Brownleys came along and Chrissy Wellington. That was a great era for British triathlon.
Yeah, I mean, really, it was those guys, it was Spencer and Simon that really got me into the sport. My dad used to do it as well back in those days. But even though Spencer and Simon are only a couple of years older than me, they were started very young, but they were like the pinnacle of the sport, and I used to think they were so cool, and the sport looked so awesome just to get involved in. So yeah, I got into it super quickly just because I kind of gets obsessive when you're a young kid and you got guys like that to look up to.
Now, when you got in, we're talking the triathlon became an Olympic sport in 2000. So was that a goal for you to try to make it to the Olympics?
Yeah, I mean, I think particularly in the UK, you know, the Olympics is the big thing.
Yeah.
And it still is, even, you know, with the Brownlee brothers.
Yeah.
It's still the focus. And so, yeah, for me, it was, you know, that was the dream. I wouldn't say I didn't get into it for that reason. I mean, I just got into it just because I loved it, you know.
Yeah.
It was such a awesome, cool sport, but that became the goal. And I think back then, you know, things like Kona were in the UK were a bit of a kind of a distant,
right?
You know, a vague kind of image. You know, it wasn't that big in the UK, and you know, it's not the same as it is in the US. And just got into it because I loved it, really.
So when you look back at your career as a pro athlete, what were some of your best performances?
I won a lot of British championships. I won nine British championships. I guess I won a couple of 70.3s. I had a lot of podiums at that distance. I think the greatest memory I have was probably the Commonwealth Games when it was in Manchester, which is very close to where I'm from, and just the crowd for that race was, you know, incredible. And it was, you know, I think crowd brings goosebumps and atmosphere, and just that memory will always stick in my head, I think. But
when you look back at Rich Allen the athlete back in those days, I mean, obviously, anytime someone's a quote unquote pro athlete, it's okay, I'm here to make a living. Besides doing what I love, I want to make a living.
Yeah.
Was there a point where you go like, hey, if I ever was in a position to help out other pros, this is what I think really needs to be changed. This is where they need help.
Yeah. I mean, I think because I was in the sport for 21 years, I've seen it go through a whole lot of changes. And to me, you know, 15, 20 years ago, to me, there was more money kind of floating around.
There was.
Than there is now. And,
yep.
You know, as a young pro, I was very, you know, doing pretty well. And it's kind of steadily and steadily got worse and worse. I mean, it has a lot to do with it. I mean, there's a lot more pros now, but I feel a little bit sad, you know, getting to the end of my career and just the state of the sport is gone down and down and down. And in some ways, I mean, the participation has gone up, but for pros, it's gone down. And I think something I can bring to the table is I've had years where I've done very, very well financially, but then I've had years where you earn absolutely nothing and you're broke. And, you know, how do you survive and get by when it's like that, you know? And that's the key is, you know, the pro union, we're trying to represent everyone. And I think I kind of feel for everyone, you know?
What's interesting to me is when I look at, obviously, Ironman's flourishing. Yeah, they have 40 full Ironman events. They have 80 half or 70.3s. They're on a roll. Which is great. I think this year will be $5 million is their prize purse across all their, you know, their platform. At the same time, back in the day, and you remember this, you could go negotiate a deal with Roth. You could negotiate a deal with Nice. You could sort of have your own deals with 15 different race directors.
Yeah.
When everything's under that one umbrella, that stuff goes away.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, triathlon's become so much more of a big money business from the organization's point of view that, you know, it's impossible to do that now. And I think, you know, a big part of what we need to do is present things as business opportunities and business proposals. And, you know, we have to, you know, think in a different way to how it's been done in the past. It's not the same as it used to be. And, you know, it's much more complex. It was very simple back in the old days. And, you know, an athlete would just say, hey, I'm the number one in the UK and, you know, pay my, you know, give me some appearance money. And that was it. And
right
now it's, you know, they're going to say, well, hey, you know, what's in it for us? You know, and, you know, how are you going to help us? And that's the way we've got to see it now.
Yeah, well, it's in this day and age, it's are you going to move the needle for me? Are you going to drive any more participation to my event through social media, through relationships? What are you going to do? You know, everybody's looking for more participants. I look at it, we sort of have this endurance entertainment marketplace with Spartan Race and Tough Mudder and Ironman and, you know, Color Run and everything is under this umbrella. So there's more participatory events than ever before. The problem is that's a good thing. And at the other side of it, you know, triathlon's fighting to get those participants. So it's a sport that's a tad flat at the moment. So from a pro side, what led to, because I was in Bahrain when I saw you guys meeting and talking about, you know, potentially putting the union together. And I've been around the block a few times and have seen a lot of unions over the years from a pro side. And usually what happens is the top guys and gals, they've got their agent, they're negotiating with the sponsors, with the with the race directors, and they, you know, they might lend their name to something, but they're not necessarily intimately involved because the people who could benefit the most from the union are really sort of the middle packers or the lesser athletes. So how do you, you know, and every one that's happened before in terms of a union has gone away. How do you make sure that this one is different?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's been a lot of confusion when it's got launched as to, you know, how and why, et cetera. And, you know, there was an article the other day that, you know, I put this together myself. And,
right.
You know, it's completely wrong. You know, this was a group of athletes, you know, as you said, they got together at challenged Bahrain and decided they wanted to change the sport and you know, something, it was time to make a change. And, you know, these athletes instigated it, and it was a lot of the best athletes in the world. And, you know, the thing is, a lot of the athletes have nothing to gain from this.
Right.
They're just saddened by the state of the sport. You know, Sebastian Kienle and Marinda Carfrae are doing awesome. They don't need a union to succeed. You know, Dirk Bockel's busting his ass trying to help, you know, and getting criticized for it. But he's, you know, he doesn't stand to gain for this. He's going to retire in a couple of years, and he's doing great. And
right.
None of these athletes benefit financially. You know, they put in an awful lot of time and effort and stress over this. So I think that highlights that, you know, they're doing it because they're passionate about it and because the sport needs to change. And that's what people have to realize, that, you know, there's been a lot of people saying, oh, they're doing it self-gain, and, you know, I'm doing it because I put it together. And it's just, it's not true. It's just, it's time to change the sport. And I think even, you know, Ironman, WCC, Challenge, they all appreciate that something needs to happen and something needs to change. And, you know, as to what that is, they're not exactly going to specify, but they realize that there's a mess with the communications channels, and, you know, there's a mess with people just going off on social media and insulting people. And
yeah,
that's not the way to do it. And I think for the pros, they realize that, you know, the top pros, they realize that there needs to be a change in the standard of professionalism. And, you know, that's what has to change, is professional standards have to change. And that has to involve, you know, your new pros, you know, your lower income pros, your Kona champions. Everyone needs to step on and change their game if they want to change the sport. And, you know, and that's the only way WTC, Challenge, ITU, that's the only way everyone's going to listen to the pros, if they step up their professionalism and change their ways. And, you know, that's the first step, you know, is changing that. And, you know, it's, we hit, you know, a lot of stumbling blocks starting out, because, you know, pros are like, well, this, you know, this group is a small representation and they selected themselves. And
right,
you know, the bottom line is we had to start somewhere. This had to get going and off the ground. And, you know, this is just the beginning. It's the foundation. It's not the end result. And, you know, people are saying, well, it's not a union. We know, you know, how do you define a union, et cetera. It doesn't matter what we're called. It's what we do and what we deliver down the road that matters. And, you know, we need every pro to stand behind us and get together and support it, you know, instead of doubting it and criticizing it and things like that. And, you know, we still have a lot of questions to answer. And, you know, I appreciate people have doubts and concerns and things like that. But, you know, the bottom line is we are here to help. You know, all the board members are here because they care, not because they want to get anything out of it. You know, that's the bottom line. And pros have to see that this is about every single pro. This is about changing the sport from your low-income pros to, you know, your high-income pros and the best in the world. It's about changing it across the spectrum. And this is just the beginning, you know.
So when I look at what I would like to see from a pro group, obviously I think it's not just from the pro group, but with the race directors, we're in a position where we need to grow the sport, right? We need new people coming into the sport. How can Ironman Challenge and a lot of people who have their own agendas put some of that stuff away to get new people into the sport? How can the pros be a big part of that? Because you think about it, those are our stars. Those are our heroes, yeah. And they represent all the different countries. So coming up with like last year, Ironman or Lifetime Fitness did a thing called Commit to Try, to do, and there are 77 clubs, they did a indoor triathlon where you, you know, swam in a pool, you ran a treadmill, and you rode a stationary bike. And, you know, they filled up all the workouts in all clubs. And to me, that's great. The hashtag was commit to try, and Ironman was supporting it. New people in the sport. To me, that's something where, you know, between Lifetime and Ironman, they should be reaching out to a Marinda or other top pro or yourself to say, hey, listen, we could use a couple of top pros at these events to, you know, to give us a media hook and to give the brand new triathletes someone to emulate and someone to learn about.
Yeah, I think that the main point in all of this is that pros have to start giving back
yes.
to the sport, because I think up until now what's happened is pros have said, you know, give me more prize money, give me more benefits, change the race format, you know, I want this, without saying, we will do this in return.
And right.
I think that has to be reversed, and the pros say, look, you know, WTC, we would like to see these changes, but what we want to do is we want to help you, and we want to give back, and, you know, we want to go into schools and help the sport
yes.
develop. We want to go into local communities and health clubs, and, you know, we will arrive at the race a day early and go and do that for, you know, 2-3 hours before the race. You know, we will help promote the sport in social media. You know, we'll write blogs about, you know, the event. And, you know, we have to give back for free. If we want anything back in return, we want the sport to develop. And I think, you know, it is a negotiation process, but we have to completely change the way we look at the sport as pros. And, you know, start saying we have to work. You know, we have to work for what we want. And that involves giving up our time to help, you know, help kids, help, you know, poorer communities, help them get into sport. You know, how do developing countries do triathlon when they haven't got any money? You know, how do people afford a bike or, you know, race entry? And, you know, how do we help that? And
right. No. That's all important.
I think that's the way pros have got to start thinking, you know, is this. And I think a big part of what we want to introduce as well is a very detailed code of conduct which outlines all these things that pros need to help and give back and help race directors promote a race, things like that, rather than just showing up and racing, taking a price check and leaving.
You know,
that's not what it's about. And if we have a detailed code of conduct that the pros can follow and everyone can see, and this code of conduct needs to be, we haven't finished putting that together yet, and it needs to be put together with race directors, with the media, with race organizations, with everybody, as a guide to what's expected of pros and what pros are going to do for the sport, you know, in return for anything that is beneficial to pros.
Right. So what I look at is, in this last year, you think about it, Hy-Vee, I think, had put $25 million into their triathlon over 8 years. Lifetime and Toyota pulled their prize purses from New York, Chicago, Dallas, their whole series. So
yeah.
We sort of have to look at it and go, okay, let's look in the mirror a little bit. What was it? And sometimes things, you talk about 8 years, that's a national company being involved with a sport for 8 years is actually about 5 years more than normal.
Yeah.
Right? But at the same time, you sort of have to look in the mirror and go, okay, why didn't they stay? Why didn't they feel they got the value? What could we have done to, you know, obviously the Lifetime folks felt that, hey, the pros aren't moving the needle for us, or else they'd be continuing to do prize money, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I mean, I think a sponsor wants to see, you know, a return on their investment, but
yeah.
Equally the race director needs to see a return on their investment in the pros, and it's a cycle. And if the pros, like I said, are just taking a paycheck and leaving, how is that helping the race director and then, you know, and, the, you know, in turn the sponsor? And it's not helping them. So, you know, this is, you know, what needs to change is, you know, I think it's a communications process. So, you know, before a sponsor is going to pull and a race is going to pull their prize purse, you know, the race directors need to speak to the pros, which is we're here for and say, look, we're going to pull our price purse because the sponsor's going to pull out because we're not getting anything back from the pros. And it's up for us to say, look, hold on a minute, we will come up with a plan, you know, with all the pros as to how we can turn that around and change that. And, you know, the pros will work to make that money worth it. And then the sponsor's going to be happy and it'll carry on. And that just doesn't happen now. It just stops.
It just goes. I know.
Yeah,
it just goes
away. And it's gone.
One of the things that, you know, when you guys are in Bahrain having this discussion, you know, it's a little bit of a false reality because you got $500,000 in prize purse in Bahrain. You've got all the athletes being flown in, put up at a 5-star hotel, fed. So there's really no risk for any of these athletes come there and race because everything's taken care of. And the reality is, I don't think the Sheikh from Bahrain was looking for a return on investment, right? He was looking, he's spent almost $5 million on a transition area. So what he's looking for is he's looking for buzz for the country. And it's just not reality going, okay, we're here in Bahrain and this is the model. This is sort of what we should get around the world. It's a little bit of a false reality when they're looking at that because, like you know, most race directors aren't in a position like the Sheikh of Bahrain who money is no object.
I think that's a little bit of a dream, you know, like that every race would be like that, and
that'd be great. That'd be lovely.
That's a long way off. It's about going back to basics and, you know, looking at the smaller races and, you know, things like, you know, why are race directors having to pull prize purses in the US and, you know, things like that. It's, you know, instead of attacking these race directors and organizations, you know, why are they doing it and how can we change that and how can we help that and can we help that? And I think we can, but it's, you know, it's going back to the beginning and bringing the pros into the business planning side of things and, you know, how can pros actually deliver return on investment for a race director and a sponsor?
So when I look at things that make sense, you've got the greatest athletes in the world. There's no question in my mind that triathletes are the greatest endurance athletes on the planet. They're all, a lot of them came from, you know, they were age groupers. You know, all of a sudden they become professional athletes. It's not like they grew up in soccer or baseball or football where they thought they were going to be a professional athlete. They knew they were going to be, they were on the career track to be a professional athlete. A lot of our guys started in other stuff and all of a sudden go, oh my God, I got a talent for this. I can be good. So I think that relates to the average person who's going, you know, hey, God, Andy Potts was making 90 sales calls a day in Chicago and then realized he wanted to be a professional athlete. And a year and a half later, he was on the Olympic team. So you know, those stories resonate. And my feeling is as a union, as a group, those are the stories that the media would be interested in. Do you see that as part of your mandate to get those stories out there on who your athletes are and what makes them special and how approachable they are? Because I think a lot of media doesn't really know, mainstream media now, our small niche of triathlon, they know all the athletes. But for us to get non-endemic sponsors involved, for us to get more national media in Outside Magazine and ESPN, we need to have those storylines, right? Do you see that as part of what you're going to be trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's several things. I mean, the board, we do need to, you know, diversify and spread the board. So, right now we do need more people involved who are on the board down the road that are sort of beginning their triathlon journey and are struggling and are from developing countries. So, you know, we've had some criticism that the board is just, a lot of the best athletes in the world. It was simply that way because they were the ones who were at that meeting and started the group, you know. So that's the only reason is those guys, they weren't selected, they weren't picked. So that's the first thing to say is it does need to change and we do need to have more representation from, you know, other areas and, you know, that will happen. But like you said, you know, most of the athletes on the board have a story because they weren't always
No.
You know, the best athletes in the world. And,
yeah.
You know, I mean, myself, when I started, I used to sleep in my bike bag before a race because I couldn't afford a hotel room.
Right.
I seriously used to do that. And, you know, a lot of the other pros were the same. You know, that's the way they came. And you're right, you know, I think we have some interesting stories that we do need to get across to the mainstream media. And if we are to reach a big non-endemic sponsor, then, you know, that's the way to do it, is that, you know, this is our story and it's an interesting one. And, you know, it's one to get involved in. Sure.
Storytelling is essential, I think, for the growth of any sport. And I think it's one of the things that's hurt the professional side of road racing and running, because you don't really know anything about a lot of these athletes. They come, they win New York, they win Chicago, and we don't really get to know much about them. Where if you look at the storytelling that NBC has done with Ironman, with the beat, you know, sometimes with the pros, sometimes with the personal interest stories. You know, you got Miranda Carfrae was a 5'3" basketball player, right, who realized eventually that maybe she's not going to have a future there. And, you know, and then the same thing, you know, like we said, with an Andy Potts or with other athletes who just realized over time, oh, my God, a Gwen Jorgensen, who all of a sudden becomes a Olympian when she didn't know how to ride a bike in 2010. Those stories. So will the group it's going to focus on non-drafting for now, but do you see eventually encompassing all of professional triathlon?
Yeah, I mean, the only reason we started out with non-drafting was, you know, that there is essentially a need for that right now. And we just felt, I mean, we did discuss it and we just felt that there was a pretty good system. I mean, I came from the British Olympic program system, and there's a pretty good system between, you know, starting out as an athlete, developing, going through the ranks of, you know, getting to World Cups and then, you know, Olympic programs and stuff like that. So that there is support and there is a good system, and I don't think it applies in every country, but it's certainly in a lot of countries. And so we didn't feel there was an urgency to do that right now. But I mean, down the road, it's not for me to decide that, and it's not for the board to decide that. It's for the whole pro athlete community to decide that. And I think if we get athletes from ITU drafting races reaching out saying, "Look, we need help," and we get a lot of them, then of course we'd have to help. You know, I mean, we're here to help triathletes. You know, not just anyone in particular. So.
Well, when I look at it's funny. As soon as I got the press release on you guys starting Pro Triathlete Union, you know, then we got the press release on the water quality in Brazil, right, at the ITU race. And I'm sitting there going, you know, a pro triathlon group would have and could have been on top of this 6 months ago and said, listen, the water quality down there is horrific. We're not letting our athletes get in the water. Right?
Yeah.
And Calgary last weekend, where people go off course in the swim, and the cop-out, I think it's a cop-out from race directors, is it's a pro's responsibility to know the course. I think that's garbage. I think it's up to a race director to mark a course efficiently enough, because when you're racing, you've done it for 21 years. How many times can you have a clear thought when you are racing? You don't think that well when you're on a bike or running or swimming. You just are following the feet in front of you, the cones, the markers, etc. So, to me, those are a couple of issues that, you know, those need to be worked out down the line.
Yeah, and I think a big part of, you know, people say, why should I join the Pro Tri Union? You know, obviously there's representation, but I think a big thing that we need to get across is support. So, you know, there's been a lot of incidents with athletes going off course in races, and we need to stand behind those athletes and, you know, and sit down with the race directors and organization and say, you know, is this fair? Was it fair? You know, what happened?
Exactly.
Sort of be a bit mediator and work it out. And, you know, just things like, you know, if an athlete hits a spectator and gets thrown in jail, like happened a few years ago.
Yeah,
you know, who helps the athlete?
Right.
Nobody. And you know that's another reason is helping in that respect as well. You know, we are here to help athletes, not to hinder them, to help them. And, you know, that's a big, big part of what we need to do.
The other is creating a standard. I know one of the things that's always been frustrating to me is going back to Tim DeBoom getting a drafting penalty in Kona when he was the best cyclist in the sport, right? Or last year with Jan Frodeno or Jody Swallow.
Yeah.
For a world championship, who are these officials? Right? What is their background? Yeah. Have they performed well at other world-class events, which is why they're at a world championship? Because that the amount of dollars, the amount of prestige that's involved with these world championship events, I think it's an organization like yours is going to need to be there to say, listen, let's take a look at some of these calls, and was this appropriate, and look at how it affected that person's race.
I think, you know, across the whole sport, rules as a whole,
yeah,
you know, drug testing, drafting, you know, can you have outside assistance, things like that. Rules need to be standardized. And, you know, personally, I think, you know, the ICU is the governing body of our sport. And, you know, that's where they need to step in and say, look, we're going to standardize all rules. And, I mean, things like drug testing with, you know, one race there's no drug testing, another race there's drug testing. And
right,
that's something that used to frustrate me as an athlete was I would do a race and there'd be no drug testing. And, you know, I'd be like, how's that fair? And then another race down, you know, across the country, there would be drug testing. But, you know, that's not standardized rules. And it creates confusion. It creates loopholes. It's, you know, things like the, you know, the stagger rule in the USAT. You know, if you come from Europe, you've never heard of that before. And you're like, you, all of a sudden, everyone's weaving all over the road. And you don't know what they're doing.
Exactly. No, I saw it firsthand. Yeah. I saw that down at a race in Texas where it's a little bit of a cop-out. Because I think if it was under $5,000 in prize purse, it's considered an amateur event. At least this was back in the day. And so, you know, you had you had pro athletes from the ITU side who were, hey, if there's $5,000, it's a pro race. So they're playing by the pro rules. And they considered it an amateur race, and they DQ'd the top four guys and gave the money or whatever, the first place, the fifth place guy. I didn't think that was fair at all. Race director was getting out from under having to be a quote-unquote pro race and to follow those rules and pay more dollars for officials by being, you know, $5 under the $5,000 limit. So you're right. Standardizing rules and, you know, pros work hard. It's a tough way to make a living, and they've made a choice not to go like a Meredith Kessler, because I'm sure making a lot more money in the financial industry. But she loves this. And so for someone like her, it's essential that these races are run professionally from top to bottom.
Yeah. And I think another big thing that needs addressing is you know, how do pros step up from being an age group athlete, an amateur athlete, to a professional athlete, and that there's a big void between the, it's a huge jump, you know, and pros have no guidance, they have no assistance, you know, that I think there needs to be a middle ground, like a, almost like a new race category that's kind of halfway between the two, and there needs to be more assistance for these guys, guidance, you know, financial support available, things like that to help, because, you know, pros do turn pro and then they struggle because it is a huge step to, you know, then even, you know, these pros all of a sudden they're racing at 70.3 where prize money's top six and they're not making any money because they're coming 10th.
Right.
And how can they possibly survive? They can't. And, you know, so I think, you know, all the lower income pros, the new pros need to see that that's something that we have to help them with and address, is those specific areas in the sport.
Now, are you, Rich, are you still, do you still represent Dirk Bockel?
Yeah, I help him. I mean, I helped Dirk Bockel find new sponsors. I'm representing him. I work with Josh Wise, the NASCAR driver.
Yep. Is that, do you consider that, you look at that as a conflict? With you know, representing an athlete who's also on, you know, could be on your board, or do the other athletes look at it as a conflict? Personally, You know, my thought is that if you're able to bring a sponsor to the table for Dirk, that sponsor also could be involved in the sport.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a conflict. I mean, to be honest, you know, I represented Dirk for about a year, and when I started doing this, I was doing this for 6 months as a volunteer. So,
right.
You know, I still had to do other things as well.
Sure.
I can't just drop Dirk right now, but... I mean, I probably think down the road there'll be too much work involved with the pro union to do these things. But you know, I think honestly, as far as sponsorship goes, we'll have to have someone else trying to go out there and find sponsors, because that's a huge job on its own, you know. And,
it is.
Something I can't do everything, you know. Which is basically what I'm trying to do right now. So.
Well, what's interesting is, I'm sure you remember the old AVP, the Association of Volleyball Professionals. And
yeah.
I saw them sort of shoot themselves in the foot because they went out and sold a sponsor for all the athletes to, it was either Gatorade or Powerade. And during the first TV event, if Gatorade was a sponsor, one of the athletes was wearing a Powerade towel, right? Sort of cannibalizing the sponsor they had just brought on board. And then I was like, I'm going, that union isn't going to last very long. And it didn't, right? And the sport sort of went away after a while, too. So it's, you know, the hard part is the smaller the sport, sometimes the more incestuous it can be, because someone's an agent, someone's an athlete, someone's, you know, is a coach wearing a lot of different hats. At the same time, you know, trying to grow the sport. Is that going to be a challenge for you?
I think it's going to be a big challenge, because, like you say, we just cannot bring in Nike or Gatorade or any sponsor like that. And, you know, we don't particularly want to conflict with WTC sponsors or challenge sponsors or any athlete sponsors, because it's just going to cause conflict and trouble. So... it is a big problem, but having said that, I mean, I think we are in talks with some big companies that are non-endemic and wouldn't conflict with anyone. And
good.
So it's certainly possible. I don't think we need a sponsor to survive. I think, you know, if we get a sponsor, that money is going to be pumped into, you know, grants for athletes and prize money, and, you know, we wouldn't be pumping that into ourselves. Really, so, you know, it's kind of the way I see it is, it's just like a nice bonus for the athletes if we can secure a sponsor, but it's definitely going to be a challenge for sure.
When I look at what's made sports successful in the past, I look at running. At the beginning, who had the most vested interest? It was Nike, Adidas, Reebok, those type of guys to support events. And when the sport really made it is when the demographics sold it, and you had Transamerica, John Hancock, people outside of sport. And I think that's really where triathlon is sitting, is getting the mass, getting bigger numbers, getting more connectivity so that we can draw those type of sponsors into our sport, which solves a lot of the issues, right? You start getting bigger sponsors in with bigger paychecks, everybody's happy.
Yeah, the way I see it, you know, there's a lot of CEOs doing triathlon now, and it's really getting out there to the corporate world. And, you know, I think we can sell to a sponsor, not so much the advertising that, oh, we'll get you this amount of advertising, but the fact that we can bring pro athletes into a corporation and do corporate wellness seminars, things like that, that are going to benefit a big company and their productivity. And, you know, sports psychology is very, you know, it's a crossover to business psychology, and, you know, bringing athletes in to talk about their sports psychology process and how that can actually help business, you know, productivity and psychology. And I think that's our best selling point is, you know, a lot of the top pros have incredibly strong, intelligent minds. And bringing those into the, you know, the corporate structure to help a business grow is much more beneficial than just saying, oh, you can have your logo on our website and on athletes' kit, and, you know, that has value, but it's limited.
The thing that you have is you've got, again, the fittest athletes on the planet, and the problems that we have, especially in the U.S., and I'm sure this is in Europe as well, is childhood diabetes, obesity. Those are the things that our guys can speak to and represent. So represent how to overcome that for the adults and kids. It's wellness, it's longevity, it's fitness, and how these sports change lives for the better. You do a triathlon, you're a better parent, you're a better kid, you're a better employee and better employer. You've got a big job, my friend, because I think there's a lot out there, but it's going to take some time, and you're going to be herding some cats for a while, trying to get everybody to understand that. Number one, we got to start with making our pros important, making our pros understand that they have a responsibility to grow the sport and expand not just the reach, but the demand from the media for more.
Yeah. I mean, I think, from our initial launch, I mean, we had a lot of positivity and we had a lot of emails of support, but, there's clearly doubt out there. And
sure.
Uncertainty. I mean, if there wasn't, I would have. There always was going to be. And I think we have. We've launched now because we have, 4 or 5 months to get the point across that, pros, we need your help, we need your input, we need your support. We're here for you. Down the road, everything will be voted on. It will be their decisions, not our decisions. And, we have to get the point across that, media, corporations, organizations, age group athletes, we need your help. We need your input. We don't, going and bashing us on Twitter doesn't do anyone any good. We need you to email us or pick up the phone and say, look, hey, I've got this idea. This is maybe an idea you should do. And, suggestion, that's what we need. So
yep.
That's the next step over the next few months is getting input, listening to people, trying to convince people why and what we're doing and take it from there.
Love it, Rich. Well, let me know how I can help. I mean, one of the things that I've always been, I feel like we do a lot of interviews with top pros on the show, trying to give people a little insight on who these people are rather than just a 30-second soundbite of I went fast.
Yeah.
That's the type of stuff down the line where you can be showcasing not just my stuff, but other people's stuff on your website and say, hey, did you check out this interview with this pro or that pro? Because that's how you grow the sport. More interest, more eyeballs, more people listening. The more exposure we provide for our athletes and our sport, we all win.
Yeah, we need to create role models. And, that's the way to do it is pros with inspiring stories and, people like you can deliver those stories to people. So
love it.
It's just what we need. Yeah.
Rich, thanks so much for your time. Again, our guest has been Rich Allen. He is a former 21-year professional triathlete. Man, that could kill some brain cells. He's the executive director of the Pro Triathlete Union. Rich, best of luck with everything you're doing, and please let me know how I can help. You guys are, when I look at your list of athletes between Marinda and Sebastian and Meredith, it's, not just some of the greatest athletes, but some of the greatest people. And those are the folks who are going to benefit the least from this, for financially. They're doing this. I know they're doing this because they want to grow the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you very much for your time, Bo. I truly appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be in touch.
Absolutely.
Sure
absolutely. Again, this is Babbittville Radio. We are brought to you by RacePlace.com. RunCatalina.com. Catalina Eco Marathon coming up in late November. Our Challenged Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $65 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And please subscribe to iTunes. You can check out all of our interviews on Babbittville.com or subscribe to iTunes. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.